find theirs.
It was the bit that existed and then stopped existing.
Yeah, we were like, all our takes are hot, so it doesn't matter.
Right. We abandoned the gummy takes, but we're not abandoning you because we're here for episode 82. I'm Tony. I'm with Shane. I'm with Ryan. I'm with Craig. How's it going, guys?
Not too bad.
Hello.
Let's party. It's Wednesday night. Ryan, you're going off the grid again.
Return to monkey.
That's why we're recording early.
Exciting. Very excited for you to go back to your roots, reassert man's dominance over the flora and fauna of northern Wisconsin.
That's right.
New season of Alone starring Ryan.
Oh, dude. Right. Ryan would outlast anyone I know in Alone. And the best part about living, moving back home and living where I grew up is now I'm 10 minutes away from Ryan. So if the shit hits the fan, he's just going to have us showing up with our cats like, what's up? Can you teach us how to hunt? Can you teach us how to grow good vegetables? And can you take us fishing?
We'll teach Leche how to hunt for us.
Oh God, my cat's so stupid; he would die immediately.
He's good bait.
Oh, he's good. So, all right. So we got episode 82. Who wants to go first?
Ryan, you got a shorty?
I got a really quick shout out.
Let's do it.
All right, let's make a shout out to Mr. Bob Scarpitto. All right,
that's a good name.
That's right. Famously a punter, but also played halfback and flanker. Played at the University of Notre Dame. He played for Shane's San Diego Chargers in 1961, Denver Broncos 62-67, and the Boston Patriots 1968. Now, this is probably the first punter I think we've ever done on this. Okay. And the reason I pulled him up is because he's got three distinct Denver Broncos records. Most punts in a season, 105 punts in 1967.
God damn.
Is that that's a 10 game season, isn't it? It's either 10 or 12.
I believe so. In the 60s. Yeah. Most punt yards in a game. Guess how many punt yards he had in the record.
Was it over 300?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, way over. Almost double.
Holy shit.
565.
Oh my God.
On September 10th, 1967 against Oakland.
Do they have any offensive players? Was it like that game during COVID where
was Tennessee
was the quarterback?
Oh, Kendall Hinton.
Yeah. And in that same game, he also set another record for most punts in a game, 12.
Oh my God. He did. When you said 526, or however many, I figured that he like boomed a couple like 70 yarders. It's like, no, he just kicked 12 times and they were 40 yards each.
That must have been the fastest game in NFL history.
Maybe. Oh my God. But yeah, shout out to Mr. Bob Scarpitto.
I thought we were going to start with the strip. I thought he was going to be like a strip club owner because that sounds like a gentleman's club name.
He works with Tony Baselli. He's a part of the Baselli crime family syndicate. I'll hop in next. I have a sequel. We have a sequel this week.
Uh-oh.
And if you think about it, it's a prequel for next week.
Dude, continuing the lore forever.
All right. So when I looked up the 1981 Baltimore Colts, their entire recap video was a look forward to 1982. And their new head coach, a guy by the name of Frank Cush, right? Now, Frank Cush is a recurring character on TH Fantasy since he was not only name-dropped by Shane last week, but he was also mentioned on this show previously because he's the namesake for the award given to the best high school offensive lineman in Arizona, which was an award won by former podcast subject Richie Incognito.
Whoa.
It's all interconnected.
Exactly. So similarly to Incognito, Cush was a raging asshole and a bully. Even if the Frank Cush Award was given to the player most likely to be a racist bully, Incognito would have also been the best choice there as well. Cush was born in 1929 in Pennsylvania, played defensive line at Michigan State, didn't get drafted, served in the military during Korea as the head coach of the 1954 Fort Benning football team, which means he rose to the rank of lieutenant, but only because he was a football coach.
Damn.
So he comes back and he becomes the defensive line coach at Arizona State before taking over as head coach after two seasons. His college teams whoop ass. They were 176 wins to 54 losses and one tie. Pretty good. He was also a fucking monster. Reviews of his coaching style threw around words like intense or high contact, but it's literal abuse. His favorite drill is called Bull in the Ring, which is a drill that was banned nationwide today. It's something that we did when I played football.
Is this Oklahoma drill with barbed wire bats?
It's similar in the sense that, like, one guy stands in the middle, the players are lined up around him in a circle, the coach will yell a jersey number, and that player runs in and they just hit each other.
Speedrunning CTE.
Yes, and so Kush would keep the same player in the middle as a punishment, and if he didn't hit back hard enough, and, you know, if he wanted to teach him a lesson. So he had another drill that would also be banned if it wasn't so fucking stupid that they didn't have to ban it. So you'd have the center, the quarterback, the running back, and the halfback, and they would run up against the middle against the entire 11 players of the defense.
Really?
Yep. No other linemen, no receivers. Center, quarterback, running back, halfback, hands the ball off and faces 11 men.
Wasn't this the last play of Dallas's season last year?
So this was explicitly designed to get backs ready for the punishment of a real game, which sounds like absolute sadism, if you ask me. He also had something called Mount Kush, which is not the name of a dank strain of weed. It's actually a steep-ass mountain that he made the guys run up and down in the middle of the day as punishment.
Dude, we had a teacher in PE did that. It was it was Mount Perez. He would just make us do suicides at like a 40-degree angle. I'm like, I'm fucking 15 years old in PE, bro. What's the problem?
Right. So, like, similarly to what you're saying, Shane, like, add to the fact that all of this shit is happening in Arizona. So,
dude, these are war crimes. No wonder why Roger Carr almost beat his ass.
He was winning, right? So everyone seems to agree, hilariously though, that like he had a total Napoleon complex and his like shittiness was him overcompensating for being just a little guy, which, I mean, that doesn't make up for all the brain damage that he like imposed on people, but it's still nice to be like, yo, fuck you, shorty. It gets better from here, by the way. In 1979, a former player named Kevin Rutledge sues the school for over $1 million because of abuse from Kush and his staff that forced him to transfer. Apparently, Kush punched him in the mouth after he shanked a punt against the Washington Huskies in 1968. Hey, you blew that punt. Punched in the face. So during the lawsuit, Rutledge, his dad's insurance office was caught on fire and the lawyer faced death threats because of fans of the Kush.
Wow, damn, dude.
So a month later, Kush gets fired, not for punching his punter in the mouth, but for interfering with the investigation that the school was doing on the incidents. He was pressuring players and coaches not to cooperate, was terminated 3 hours before a game against Washington, who was sixth in the nation. So he got to coach that game. They went out and won the game, and he was carried off the field in victory and then cleaned out his desk that night.
Immediately put him on the trash can.
Right. His season ended 3-2, and all of those games were forfeited because they used ineligible players. Kush ends up coaching a season in Canada, leading the Hamilton Tiger Cats, go Tie Cats, to a record of 11-4-1. But after one season, he left because, this is going to shock you, he couldn't get along with the players.
Really?
I think if everybody's an asshole, I'm definitely not the problem.
Right. He told players that they couldn't tape their ankles.
What?
I don't know. I don't fucking know.
Korea thing.
So you've got this guy who's an asshole everywhere. Everybody's pissed at him. So in 1982, he goes to the Baltimore Colts, who are coming off the worst defensive season in NFL history. In his first season, which was shortened by the player strike, the Colts went 0-8-1.
Wow.
They held the first pick in the legendary 1983 NFL draft, which will be my 1983 for next week. But long story short, John Elway refused to play for Kush and decided that he would rather play baseball instead. We'll get into it next week, but long story short, they end up getting a lineman and go 7-9. The team moves to Indianapolis in the middle of the night before the 1984 season. Cush coached one season there, retired, coached then for the Arizona Outlaws of the USFL for a year. And I'm going to end this, unfortunately, with a content warning. So if child abuse makes you uncomfortable, I'm going to instruct you to maybe skip maybe like 3 minutes ahead.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, danger for a lot of Robinsons. I don't know what that means. So after he coaches in the USFL for a year, he goes to the one place you absolutely do not want him to go. A disciplinary residential school called the Arizona Boys Ranch.
Uh-oh.
The Arizona
Boys Ranch. So while it doesn't say for sure, I don't have anything that confirms or denies this, there's an LA Times piece, like a character piece, on Cush working at the residential school that was published in November 1996. And in March of 1998, a kid, the second one at the facility, died due to chronic abuse. And 17 staff members end up getting placed on the child abuse directory, and 5 are indicted for manslaughter.
What?
Fuck. Yeah. So I don't know if he was there, but he was like the head disciplinarian at this school, like a year and change before this happened.
Yeah, he's gonna be complicit. I'm just gonna make a broad claim here.
Yep.
He's involved somehow.
So I'm gonna end on a lighter note, because I'm a showman after all. In 1996, Arizona State named their stadium Frank Cush Field as part of Frank Cush Day when he was elected into the College Football Hall of Fame, which the punter, Kevin Rutledge, the guy that sued him, was quoted as saying, it was like renaming the stadium O.J. Simpson Field. So that's my 82, Frank Cush, a real piece of shit.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, my guy's a good guy. We're going to flip flop here.
All right.
So
cool.
It's like I said, usually I try to go like darker side or like, here's a bit, but I got a wholesome one for 82. So last week was an exercise of statistic masturbation when it came to wide receivers. Somebody up front about this as well, and I'll drive into the significance, is this is one of the best defenders to play the game, a Hall of Famer, a member of the Grimace Gang, also known as the Purple People Eaters, Alan Page.
Woo!
So as a kid, Paige's parents stressed the importance of education in a young person's life. And unfortunately, when Paige's mom passed away when he was 18, he pledged to become a lawyer. But also, fortunately, he made the best out of a bad situation. He was physically gifted, and it allowed him to excel in football and provide a path where he could chase his main goal in life, which was to be a lawyer. So some people are born with limitless opportunities, and I think it rules when someone like this can actually apply themselves and get what they want and do it for the greater good of humanity. So while in high school, he worked on a construction team that helped erect the Hall of Fame in Canton, which was his Hall of Fame. So it's a nice little circular life for him.
Yeah.
So another Notre Dame guy, Page played for Notre Dame and was named All-Pro before being drafted by the Vikings in 67, 15th overall. He played 11 seasons for the Vikings and was on the teams for the Super Bowl in 4, 8, 9, and 11. And for transparency's sake, I did break those into actual numbers instead of Roman numerals, so I wouldn't confuse myself during this reading.
And Shane, here's the random connection too. That punter that I talked about probably played on the same team in Notre Dame with this guy.
That's crazy, man.
He was, I know, right?
There's always some way where these dudes just overlap.
Yep.
All right, so in 78, Page would join the Bears and rack up 40 sacks in 3 seasons. So Page's success was mainly due to, along with being physically gifted and being really good at the game, his stance was different because even though he lined up on the right side, he would take a stance with his left hand, so he'd be able to exploit the balance and momentum while rushing the QB and kind of confuse defenders. So during his 15-year tenure, here's where the stat masturbation comes into play. He racked up 4 conference titles, 1 championship, played in 218 consecutive games, 22 fumbles, 148.5 sacks, 3 touchdowns, 2 from fumbles and 1 from a pick 6, 3 safeties, second most in the NFL history. He had 2 in 1 year. He was All-Pro 6 times, 9 Pro Bowls in a row, All-Conference 10 times, Defensive Player of the Year, NFL MVP, the first person in NFL history to do that, and was only repeated by Lawrence Taylor 1 time. He's a college Hall of Famer and a national NFL Hall of Famer. So this is kind of where the good humanity comes out, as opposed to being like a create a character maxed out to 99. So Page, when he was in the NFL, he was also a player representative in the union from 70 to 74 and 76 to 77. So while he played in the NFL, he also attended Minnesota School of Law and graduated in 78. And he worked in the offseason in the law firm in 79 to 84. So while he was playing football at a Hall of Fame caliber, he also went to school to get his law degree, which is, I don't know how anybody has this kind of free time.
Crazy.
So during this time, he was appointed Special Assistant Attorney General in 85, and soon thereafter was promoted to Assistant Attorney General in Minnesota. In 92, Page was elected to the open seat as an associate judge of the Minnesota Supreme Court, becoming the first African-American to serve on the court. He was re-elected in 98, becoming the biggest vote-getter in Minnesota history, again in 2004, and a final time in 2010, and he was forced to retire at the mandatory age of 70. So some courts have the right idea of, hey, your brain isn't all there. Maybe it's time to hang it up.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
In 88, Page founded the Page Education Foundation. It provides financial and mentoring assistance to students of color in exchange for those students' commitment to further volunteer service in the community. So it's, we give, but you got to get a little bit. So it
sure
promotes community involvement. So the foundation has awarded grants for more than 7,500 students who have in turn given over 475,000 hours of their time to young children. And I was reading a statistic, and as of like 2012, they've given out like $1.8 million in grants and assistance.
Wow.
Yeah. So with his daughter, Page wrote 4 children's books, and I think he should have reconsidered one of the titles because it was called Grandpa Allen's Sugar Shack.
What the fuck?
Yeah, most of them were cool. I was like, that's a little bit of a weird one.
Woof.
Yeah, so in 79, while he was an active NFL player and going to law school, he completed his first marathon. And his running routine, which took up, well, he took up to help his wife quit smoking, is believed to have contributed to why he was dismissed from the Vikings, because his schedule consisted of 35 to 40 miles per week during the season and 55 miles per week in the offseason, which caused his weight to fluctuate and below the threshold of what the Vikings determined to be acceptable for his position.
Interesting.
So he has an extensive collection of Jim Crow memorabilia, one of which was featured on Antiques Roadshow. He has multiple elementary schools named after him. He has 6 honorary doctorates in humane letters from different universities, 5 Ooh. Honorary doctorates of law from 5 different universities.
Oh,
and this is kind of like where I was like, all right, this guy kind of rules. So in 2018, Page accepted the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Trump against his better judgment. He didn't like Trump, and he was pretty open about that. So Page stated that my vision of the world is the same today as it was a year ago and the year before that. But this medal, this honor is far more important than my personal beliefs, my personal likes and dislikes. The politics of it, that's something that at this point is not important to me. What is important to me is to make the world a better place, and that is literally my only focus. This administration has played on people's worst fears and played to people's racial insecurities. When asked what he would say to the president, Page said, I'm inclined not to want to talk to him because you'd probably get more reaction from the paint drying on the wall. And the final quote that he said that related to when his wife passed away right before that he went and accepted this medal was that they're trying to ensure that every child has the opportunity to learn. The work that we both have put in this with respect to racial, gender, and social justice, trying to ensure that everybody gets treated equally and fairly, and to shine a light on those who helped us get here, helped us do these things and what we've done. We all stand on the shoulders of somebody in accomplishing whatever we do.
Hell yeah.
Alan Page.
Hell yeah. That's a good one. That is the exact... I'm glad you did that as the opposite of Frank Cush, because good God.
A nice little palate cleanser. But like, I was just reading about him, like, dude, this guy seems like, if I saw this in a movie, I'd be like, this is way too fake. There's no way this human being is real with all these accolades and still has his brain to do all this.
Right. All right, Ryan, take us home.
All right. Well, let's talk about someone who was the head coach for one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time. The head coach of the New England Patriots in the 1985 Bears victory, Mr. Raymond Berry.
Okay.
All right. So he was playing in the league around the time when the tight end wasn't really a position yet. It was the split end.
Right.
He played for, let's see. Yeah, yeah, he was like one of the best targets for Johnny Unitas in the Colts.
Yeah, he was Colts legend.
Right.
We're not a Steelers podcast anymore. We're a Colts podcast.
No, yeah. We transitioned from Steelers to Cowboys to Colts.
Yep.
Right. He's born in Corpus Christi, Texas, on one of our friends' birthdays, February 27th, 1933. Hey. Spent majority of childhood in Paris, Texas. Went to Paris High School. So in 1954, he was drafted by the Baltimore Colts in the 20th round as the 203rd overall pick. Considered to be a long shot to make the team roster, he was used sparingly as a rookie, only getting 13 passes. But by his second season, he was a starter because Johnny Unitas liked him.
Ryan, I just realized you're always looking for your Raymond Berry when you're scouting tight ends. You're like, nah, yeah. Dude, this dude went undrafted. He's going to blow up. Yeah. Trust me.
So, yeah, played all seasons with the Colts. Over the next 12 seasons, Unitas and Raymond Berry became one of the most dominant passing catching duos in NFL history. He also did not miss a single game until his eighth year in the league. Led the NFL in receptions and 2 receiving yards 3 times and receiving yard touchdowns twice.
Damn. Jeez Louise.
One of his most notable performances was the 1958 NFL Championship game, known as the greatest game ever played.
Which we talked about like a week ago.
Right.
and before that, too.
Yep.
In which he led the Colts to the franchise's first title and then championship record, 12 catches for 178 yards and a touchdown.
Good God.
Oof. And that's in 1958. I mean, that's beyond Kelsey numbers.
Like we said, we have to adjust those for inflation.
Yeah. At the end of regulation, he caught 3 consecutive passes for 62 yards to set up the Colts' tying field goal. He also had 2 key receptions for 33 yards during the Colts' final game-winning drive in overtime.
Sick.
His 12 receptions would remain an NFL championship record for more than half a century. Topped by, guess who?
Jerry Rice?
No. Demaryius Thomas in 2013.
That's exactly. I was just kidding when I said Jerry Rice. That was meant to get you. Actually, though, rest in peace to Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, right. He's led the NFL in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns in 1959, becoming the 4th player to record a triple crown in receiving. His 14 receiving touchdowns set a Colts single-season franchise record that stood unmatched for over 4 decades.
Wow.
Obviously, this guy made it to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
But 1960... was his only 1,000-yard season, catching 74 passes. Career highs in receiving yards, 1,298. That averages, back in that season, 108 yards a game.
Oof.
God damn, dude.
Oof.
Right? That season, the next highest yards per game average of a player was 81. So he beat it by 27 yards.
I love this because, like, football now are men that are essentially machines. And back then, it's like there's athletes versus the guys that are still, like, booze drunk from the night before and, right, like, chain smoke and are going to die of diabetes instead of CTE. Like, and so when you have an actual athlete going up against those people, those fucking lugheads. It's like, all right, cool. I'll just do this.
Do you think also to all the, like, the lead in the water, like, fried their brains to be like, hey, we should put more than one person on this human being to block them? Because, like, I'm failing to see the disconnect here. If, like, just throw everything you got at him.
Nope. Just going to let it ride.
So let's see. Yeah, he was only a, so this guy was all about football. The rest of his life was all around football. He went on to be a coach the rest of his career. Was only a head coach once, and that was with the Patriots from 84 to 89. But straight out of playing, he went to be the wide receivers coach at Dallas. Yeah, he was a Cowboy coach, and then he went to Arkansas for 2 years as a wide receivers coach. Detroit Lions, Cleveland Browns, then became the New England Patriots wide receivers coach, which led him to get the head coaching job. After that, he went on to coach the Detroit Lions as a quarterback's coach and the Denver Broncos as a quarterback's coach. That was the extent of his career in coaching. But another interesting thing about this guy is he was like half blind. He had to wear like early style like contacts. Like, I don't know when contacts were invented, but I would imagine it was probably around the 50s or 60s. So they were in their infancy of, you know,
asbestos.
Right. So he had several physical ailments during his football career. But Barry said a lot of this was exaggerated by the media for stories. He was skinny and injury prone, such that when his college teammates saw him for the first time, they sarcastically dubbed him Jack Armstrong, the All-American boy. I don't know why that probably meant something back then.
Was that when Stretch Armstrong was a thing?
I don't know. Could be. This is Jack Armstrong. But this was reportedly because one leg was shorter than the other. He had to wear padding inside his shoes in order to walk properly. It turned out it was just a misalignment in his back. As I also said, due to his poor eyesight, Barry wore contact lenses because the lenses would often slip when he did rapid eye movements toward the ball. He tried many different things, which led to sports writers to believe he had major, major eye problems, which, I don't know, he figured it out. He set all these records.
yeah. I can see generally where everybody is.
Right,
right.
He said, I tried all kinds of lenses till we got what we wanted. He said, I even had tinted lenses for sunny days so I could watch the ball come right across the sun.
I'm just picturing him with like Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit lenses.
Right.
Like all black or like flames.
Or butters from, or bubbles from Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah. Yep.
He was always famous for his attention and attention to detail and preparation, which he used to overcome his physical limitations. He was definitely a slow wide receiver, averaging around a 4.840. Rather than speed, he was renowned for his precise pass patterns and sure hands. He rarely dropped passes, and he only fumbled once in his career.
Jeez.
Crazy. He always was squeezing silly putty to constantly strengthen his hands. He and Unitas regularly worked together after practice and developed the timing and knowledge of each other's abilities that made each more effective. The reason for this, according to Barry, was that the two did not think on the same wavelength. Well, Unitas was just probably partying all the time and probably didn't remember half the things him and Barry worked on.
Probably not.
He's quoted as saying, every season we had to start all over on our thing, especially the long ball. He knew he had to release the ball when I was 18 yards out from scrimmage for me to receive it 30 yards out. I knew I had to make my break in those first 18 yards and get free within 2.8 seconds. He also relied on shifty moves and his count. He had 88 different moves to get open, all of which he practiced every week.
It's a dog whistle. That's a dog whistle. 88 dog whistle.
He kind of sounds like a fucking nerd to me.
A little bit. That's probably why he went on to coach. But yeah, this guy had a crazy, crazy Hall of Fame NFL career.
Yeah.
With Raymond Barry.
We got two Hall of Famers and an asshole. So
Hall of Fame asshole.
That's a good point. We will return and we'll talk some NFL futures in just a few. And goodbye.
You know what I say? Protest is your ass. I don't talk about my ass. I don't talk about my ass. I don't talk about my ass.
I'll eat your ass. I will eat your ass. I will eat your ass first.
You know what I say?
Eat your ass. Eat your ass. Eat your ass.
You know what I say? I don't talk about my ass. I don't talk about my ass.
I'll eat
my ass.
I'll eat
my ass. Your ass.
I'll eat
your ass. Your ass.
It's perfect. You know what? We don't ever have to do that again because I'll just copy paste that. Okay. So we are going to do a bunch. We're going to hop into a bunch of research. Most likely when Ryan comes back on the grid, we'll set up a schedule. And our goal will be to kind of do recaps. What have you missed? What we look forward to? Do we expect anything? What is it relevant for in terms of fantasy football? And one of the first things we're going to do is to kind of touch base and see where everybody's at. We looked at the FanDuel win totals for the season for each of the 32 teams. And I don't know about you guys, but I looked up and down each schedule and I sketched out wins and losses. And since there's 30,
looking to cross reference everything, I had to make a fucking Always Sunny in Philadelphia scatterbrain board. I look like a true unhinged loon doing this.
Connecting wires and yeah. Cables. So our insanity is your benefit, dear listener. So we're going to rapid fire and we're going to go 1 minute on each team. So here's how this is going to work. It's essentially a free for all, but it's a structured free for all. I'm going to say the name of the team. I'm going to tell you what the FanDuel over under is for their projected win total for the next season. And we're all just going to give thoughts for 1 minute and then we move on.
Okay.
Makes sense?
It could be less.
Yeah, there will be a few. I think there will be a few. So when I'm done saying the name of the team, I will press go. First up, we are starting with the Arizona Cardinals, who are projected 4.5 wins. Go.
Trash. No, I think there's going to be some more Kyler Murray drama or injuries this year. It's going to set that team back.
I think Clayton Tune plays more snaps than Kyler Murray, and the only reason they would be over is because weird shit happens in the NFC West, so they always trade wins, so that's the only way I see that going over.
I love the under at 4.5, but I'm not going to bet it, and I'll tell you why. Because there's just too much variance with a number that low. I mean, the Bears had the number one pick in the draft last year, but they beat the 49ers in week one. Anyone can get a random win.
True.
So at 4.5, I think it's too low for me to bet, but I think about 4 wins is about where I expect Arizona to be. All right. Moving on. The Atlanta Falcons, their projected win total on FanDuel is 8.5. Go.
I took their under. I actually was thinking about 6 wins for Atlanta. I know they just got Bijan. They're going to have an exploding offense potentially, but there's got to be some chemistry developed there, I think. Maybe 2 years, maybe they'll be 8.5.
Yeah, they need a little bit more many pieces. And that division's a little weird, too. It seems kind of wide open for who can take it. I know we'll address that with the Saints, but I think they have too many holes, even though they do punch above their weight in regards to what they did last year.
I think we all took the under, and I think my logic is the same as you guys. Like, I think Atlanta will be an improved team, but I don't think they're going over 500.
No.
All right. So let's move on. And we are going to go to the Baltimore Ravens. And their line is set as 10.5 wins. Let's go.
The Vegas line kind of shocked me on this 10.5 because I have them at 10 wins. So I'm taking the under on this one just because there's always some random stuff that goes on with Baltimore and
in their training rooms.
Yeah,
I think
10 wins is a good bet.
Yeah, I think new system, that team is going to somehow manage to be ravaged by injury again, especially OBJ not playing for more than half of the season. I think it's just going to kind of fall apart like it always does. They'll be a borderline playoff team, but not more than 10.
I think they are a team held together by duct tape and like paper clips.
The Titans in 2021. Yeah.
And if they get hit by a stiff enough breeze, they're going to collapse, and it's too bad because Lamar deserves better. All right. Let's see. Next up, we have Buffalo. The Buffalo line is at 10.5 wins, gentlemen.
I got Buffalo at 12 wins this year. I have them at 12-5. I'm still going to take the over since it's at 10.5, which could protect me at 11. But Buffalo always gets in those crazy shootout games where they just like fall apart, and they're going to get some bad losses. I feel they're going to win more than they lose, but there's going to be some bad beats.
There will be a choke game where Josh Allen does some bonehead pick like he did last year.
Yeah.
So, and it's going to be against the Patriots because fuck the Jets.
I'll put him at 11 or 12 wins. Yeah.
I see 10.5 as a low number for a team that actually doesn't have that much that scares me in the division. I still think, like, I wonder how Miami adjusts to year two in the scheme when teams have been scheming against their specific scheme. I don't know. We'll see. But I think they should beat the shit out of their division. They should at least get 4 wins in their division. All right, so moving on. A team that actually had a split, the Carolina Panthers. Line is 7.5. Shane's the only one that took the over. So, Shane, are we just hoping as Bears fans that pick is lower?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just being more optimistic just based on division, because I think that division is paper tigers compared to, like, New Orleans projecting to have, like, 9 wins. I think that's unrealistic for that scheme and that offense. That team isn't as bad as we think it is. They didn't have the number one overall pick. They traded up from 9 to have that pick. So, and Matt Rhule is gone. They're a little barren at depth, but I think they're one of those teams that does punch above the weight, where I think they'll have a couple close games that can go 50-50. And 7.5 games is still under 50%. So I think
And they got a chance to surprise some people too. Who knows how Bryce Young's going to be?
As long as he doesn't get turned into dust, then I think they'll be okay. But if he gets hit twice and he goes down, that's the end of that season.
Ryan, thoughts?
I mean, I took the under just because of all the uncertainty of the new players, the wide receiver core. But like I said, there could be some surprises.
It's true. I also took the under. I am proud of it. Next up, Chicago Bears. Bear down. Their line is also 7.5, gentlemen.
I went with the Bears at 17 wins. I'm just kidding. I took the over. I think this is going to be the Bears' year. They're not going to be crazy good, but they're going to be most likely better than last year. I've got them at 9 wins.
Tony, I'm going to let you talk.
I have them at 8. I don't think they make the playoffs, but I think they play meaningful games in December.
Sure. Well, yeah, they're going to have their biggest flaw this year is they got to play Detroit twice.
Shane, any thoughts? You also took the over.
I'm deferring to the Bears fans. They seem like they have a pretty decent schedule, and I think how strong that team was, even though they did have a number one overall pick, they still looked good at points, and they have a way better receiving room and offense now. So,
sure do. All right, so we all took the over on the Bears. Cincinnati had a spicy line of 11.5. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I went over. I got Cincy at 13 wins this year. I mean, as long as everyone stays healthy, that team's going to be, you know, most likely in the AFC championship game.
Joe Cool's winning the MVP. It's my call now.
I think it's probably going to be Cincy versus Jacksonville in the AFC championship.
I think they only lose 2 divisional games all year out of 8. I think they lose 1 to Baltimore and I think they lose one to Cleveland because Cleveland and Cincinnati always play a stupid game.
Yeah, that's true. What was that stat last year where, like, Cleveland, I forgot, it was something like they averaged over 30 points every time they play each other or something like that.
Yeah, it's nuts. So we all took the over, and it's just because the Bengals rip. All right, moving on. Cleveland, their line is actually 9.5, and I am the crazy one because I went over, so I'm going to start. I think they have a real nice schedule. I think Cleveland has a lot of breaks their way. They've got good interdivisional matchups, and I honestly think they match up pretty well with Pittsburgh. I also think they'll match up pretty well against Baltimore. I could see them stealing a game in Baltimore. So go ahead, guys. What do you got? You both took the under.
I am not that optimistic in Cleveland this year. I mean, I'm against, you know, Diddlers, number one. So
true.
I don't like the implication
that I'm pro Diddler here.
Hey, you did have the piece of shit on the 82 today, so I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's true.
I got a feeling that karma's coming Deshaun Watson's way. I don't think he's playing the whole season. So that's, I only have Cleveland at 6 wins.
I think they just have this weird middle ground of what the offense is going to do, where they're going to try to go more pass heavy, but that scheme is not designed from the head coach to be pass heavy. So they're going to have this weird, because who's behind Nick Chubb, right?
Somebody. Like Jerome Ford.
Whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just being a hater like Ryan.
Yep. All right. So next up, them Cowboys, 9.5. What do you guys got? We all went over.
Yeah, I got Cowboys at 10. So they're going to be the Cowboys. They're going to be competitive this year.
I think as long as McCarthy doesn't actually do what he thinks he's going to do and pound the rock on every play, they're going to be very successful because they have Brandon Cooks now. But then again, like, Dallas is known to start really hot and then just, like, eat shit at the end of the season where they just choke. So they'll probably make the wild card and then get blown out like they always do.
Yeah,
that's true. How the mighty have fallen. I took Dallas over as well. Dallas always seems to crush it in the regular season. Denver, 8.5. Gentlemen.
I do like a lot of the passing statistics and receiver yards that we could potentially see out of the Broncos offense this year, but I think it's going to be mainly because the Broncos are going to be playing from behind a lot of the time. So they may be good players on that team in fantasy, but I only have them at 6 wins this year.
I think the defense wins them more games like last year, where if they score more than 17 points, they're going to win a lot more games like last year. I think Sean Payton will bring out enough of Russ to cover that line. Plus, they play the Chargers twice a year, and the Chargers are consistently known to just shit the bed when it matters. So,
Denver?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we lost that game that we didn't have to even play them because whatever happened. We're like, oh, we'll have Mike Williams break his back before the playoffs. Who cares?
All right. So I also took the over. I think this is a Josh McDaniels play. 2 free wins. All right. next up, we have Detroit at 9.5. And you know what? This is going to be an interesting talk, so I'm not even going to set the timer. Ryan went over. Shane and I went under. Ryan, explain yourself.
Detroit's just going to crush this year. I've been saying it for the past 12 weeks.
You're drinking the Kool-Aid, man.
That's right. I know. At the blue Kool-Aid. I have them at 12 wins.
That's crazy.
They're going to be a contender. They're going to be a contender in the NFC this year. You mark my words.
I'll read the schedule. KC, Seattle, Atlanta, Green Bay, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, Las Vegas, Chargers, Bears, Green Bay, New Orleans, Chicago, Denver, Minnesota, Dallas, Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm still confident in my 12 wins. I mean,
well, let's go. Let's
game against KC.
Let's go game by game. Week one is Kansas City. That's a loss.
Right.
That's a shootout, though. That game is going to be close. It's going to be like 35-27.
Who knows? Uh-huh. Yeah, it could be one of those Bears San Francisco games where they just win somehow. It's the first game of the season. Kansas City maybe just thinking they can roll through this parade and they just,
everybody's still hungover.
Yeah.
Week two is Seattle.
That's a toss up, man.
I think they'll be pretty good in that one. Yeah,
their defense is a lot better. Like we've been seeing, Seattle's been consistently queuing up on that depth and getting the right guys for the team.
I think that's a loss, man. I would mark that as a loss. But well, we all think,
is it in Detroit or is it in Seattle?
It's a home game.
Yes, I like it at home.
So then, who's next?
Atlanta. That should be a win.
That's a win.
Green Bay is a win.
Yep. Yeah.
Panthers are a win.
Tampa Bay is a win.
Tampa Bay is a win.
Baltimore will be a struggle. That'll be a low-scoring game.
17-10.
I would probably give that one to Baltimore. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
But I think they beat the Raiders.
Yep.
I think they beat the Chargers.
Yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs is going to go 200 for 4 touchdowns that day. I'm going to bear witness live.
I think they beat the Bears.
Yep.
At home, I think they beat the Packers at home. Yep. I think they beat the Saints.
Yep.
I'm giving the Bears the win at home because it's a toss-up. I think they beat the Broncos. I think they beat the Vikings once, and I think they lose to Dallas.
So what is that, like 3 losses we just discussed?
Yeah,
so,
I think that puts them at over for you, Tony.
Yeah, I guess I'm wrong. I'll take it. Give me the over.
We adjust our process.
Yeah, for sure. I don't believe in anything. So
Jared Goff's gonna get a contract extension. Fucking RIP Hendon Hooker.
Yeah, right.
All right, next up, Green Bay 7.5. We all went under. Go ahead.
Yes, Bears fan. They'll be lucky to get 4. They'll be lucky to get 4 wins this year. That team's gonna have to do massive rebuild. Jordan Love's gonna fall apart. He's not gonna be who everyone thought he was. He hasn't played very much in the 3 years that he's been there behind Aaron Rodgers. It's not gonna be a Garoppolo Brady situation. This guy's just gonna shit the bed. That's all.
Okay.
I don't think it's a shit the bed thing. I think it's whatever he had there for consistency of chemistry is now gone. They drafted 5 pass catchers this year. So unless he's just going to hand the ball off every play, you can't develop that kind of chemistry sitting on the bench for 3 years and then do it in 3 months. Like I think that's just where the mistiming happens.
Exactly. They got those two new tight ends. They got rid of Tonyan, who he had experience with. Do they still have DeGuara? But
no,
they don't.
Only you know that person.
Instead of talking about Houston's line at 6.5, can I just ask you guys a question? And I'm going to set the timer to a minute. What position what position is Green Bay's first selection in the draft next year?
Next year?
Is it quarterback?
Yeah, that's probably a good. Yeah, because they're have them at 4 wins, so they're gonna have a top 10 pick.
Let's say Ryan's situation comes true, and then they go 4-13, and they're a top 5 pick. Is Green Bay's first pick a quarterback?
Don't they have always never? Well, they've only drafted like 3 quarterbacks in their entire franchise history, but like don't they always take them late? Like when was Jordan Love drafted? Like
Jordan 20th? Love was a first. No, he was 20th in the first.
Yeah, I don't see why not. That franchise is a joke. So.
Yep. And so is Houston. So we're all under there. Indianapolis at 5-12. Go ahead. Oh, no, sorry, not 5-12. The line is 6.5. What do you guys got? Ryan's under. I'm under. Shane, you're over. Does the AR Kool-Aid continue on?
I'm fully drinking it, bro. I'm locked and loaded. Give him a full drum mag. Load him up. It's mainly due to division because that division sucks. Like the only people they're going to lose twice to is the Super Bowl champion Jacksonville Jaguars.
That's right.
And I think, like you've said, Tony, I think AR is going to be your one Hurts where he's going to shit the bed a lot. He's going to look really ugly, but I think that offense is structured better to be successful compared to Philadelphia the year that Hurts started. So I think they have enough. They drafted Josh Downs. They have JT. They have Pittman. They have Alec Pierce, where I think it'll be competitive. It just kind of depends how that defense holds up.
I'm under because I think you're a year early.
Yep, that makes sense. I'm riding that train, bro. I'm too hyped.
So instead of talking about this, Ryan, I'm going to put 1 minute on the clock, and I want you to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Go.
We only need 10 seconds. They're gonna make the Super Bowl this year. I got 12 wins.
Next, Kansas City.
Yeah, let's move on. No need for anything else. Kansas City's win total is 11.5, and we all went over.
Yeah, I got them at 13 wins. Yeah,
they're just too damn good. Andy Reid can make everything out of nothing, and I think Kelce is the guy to hammer this year because, like we talked about 2 weeks ago, he's on so many cusps of all-time records that they're just going to force feed him the ball and just run that offense through him and just be like, "Hey, Pacheco, just cross those 5 yards, give us a first down. Okay, here's 12 more yards, Kelce." It's going to be the entire season.
If Patrick Mahomes starts every game, 10 games is the floor for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
Period. All right, moving on. Next up, we are going to the Las Vegas Raiders. The line is 6.5. Ryan's the only one that went over.
Yeah, I have him like, I think, 8 wins. I'm just being an optimist here.
I appreciate that.
I like some of the new targets they acquired. Michael Mayer, they got a new quarterback who's going to have to throw to the tight end a lot because Garoppolo is not known for his deep field passing.
Or it's another Josh Jacobs here.
Yeah, ooh, that's true too. That combination of, I think, just gets 8 wins. Yeah, I got him at 8.
Okay, Shane?
Yeah, I mean, Josh McDaniels under, so it's kind of...
6.5 is pretty low for what it's worth. I don't think they have a good season, but 6.5 is not a line I want to touch because I think it's spot on and it's going to come down to one game.
But they had a top 7 pick with a quote-unquote better quarterback.
That's a good point. All right, so Shane is peak like how I've felt about the Bears my entire life. The Chargers line is 9.5. He's the only one that took the under. Go ahead, Shane.
I think their schedule's a lot rougher than it looks. Again, AFC West, they play Kansas City twice. They play Denver twice. We always choke one game to Denver when it doesn't matter. We play San Francisco. It kind of depends how the defensive scheme is going to work out. So if we're running the same bullshit of we're going to let the opponent run 300 yards on us every game, we're going to get ran over in every game because CMC is going to do it. AR is going to do it. Jalen Hurts is going to do it. Tony Pollard's going to do it. Charbonnet is going to do it. We faced Seattle twice this year. Yeah, so we're going to get Ken Walker'd. Yeah, and we're known to choke. And my prediction that Brandon Staley gets fired midseason and Kellen Moore takes over after a spurt, I'm leaning hard into that one.
Ryan and I both believe, man.
I believe, and I like
you fools.
I like Justin Herbert.
we did it last year. Look what happened.
That's true. They were my offseason
27-0 fucking loss.
All right, so we'll move on to the other LA team who have a 6.5 win total. The Rams. Your thoughts? Go ahead, gentlemen.
Rams, let's see. The Rams, I have the under. I got them at like 6 wins. It's going to be an underwhelming season for them. That's all I got to say.
I got a big old fart sound for that team this year. I think Stetson Bennett's going to be the tank commander for Caleb Williams. I still think Kupp gets traded and either Stafford has some kind of medical condition where he doesn't play most of the year.
I don't think Stafford's playing the whole year.
Mm-mm. That contract's too heavy to them to try to offload, but we'll see what happens. They're a bare bones team right now.
They have nothing. We all took the under. Fuck them. Moving on. Miami's line is 9.5. Shane, you took the under.
Yeah, this is just a scared for Tua take of like, I don't know how much they did to pad that offensive line, but he can't take one more concussion. Like, nope. He gets sacked one time, he's done. And I think that's, as someone who's more prone to that kind of thing, I just think, I hate to be negative, but yeah.
Okay. I get it, man. I think that scheme works for Tua. It didn't work for Teddy Two Gloves. And yeah, I don't like to project injuries because I don't think injury prone is a real thing.
No.
But in a game where everyone gets concussions all the time, the fact that this dude could be one away is scary as fuck.
Right.
All right, so let's move on. We've got the Minnesota Vikings. Their line is 8.5. I'm the only one that took the over, and I'll tell you why. because I don't think the NFC North is where you think it is. I don't think Detroit is ready to take the full next step. I still think Minnesota wins the division. I think they beat Chicago once, Detroit once, and Green Bay twice. And I think they end up going pretty well against interdivisional teams. It's an easy schedule. They get the Raiders. I mean, they get the Chargers. They get the Chiefs. But they get the Raiders, depending on how you feel about the Broncos. I don't know. I think Minnesota could win 10 games.
Didn't they, like, take all of their primetime games away? So aren't, like, all their games at, like, normal time so Kirk can not shit the bed on national television? So there's no pressure.
That'd be awesome.
There's no pressure on him.
I have him at 6 wins because I have a feeling karma's going to come back and bite them in the ass. And I mean, those really close games that they were involved in last year, they're going to just end up losing them in the last minute.
And, like, they have to sustain the same passing offense they did, and it's, like, a lot of faith to put in Kirk Cousins. Like, I still think Addison tears it up, but I think Hawks' shares go down, and it's just a lot to maintain, and they didn't really do anything to pad their biggest hole, which was defense. So
if Jefferson goes down, what, we got the new guy?
Addison and Hawk.
They're getting Drake May as their quarterback at number 2 next year if that happens.
Oh, right? All right, so I mean, all right, New England's line is 7.5. You guys, anything? They don't inspire any confidence.
Don't they have like the hardest schedule of the year, too?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think Warren Sharp has him as 32. I think the commissioner's like, you know what, dude? Your fandom needs to eat shit for a little bit.
Yep.
You've had enough.
All right, New Orleans, 9.5. What do you guys got? We all went, you two went under. I went over.
I took to under. I got him at like 7.
I think Derek Carr is going to do Derek Carr things.
I think the division is so bad it almost doesn't matter.
That's very fair.
They could beat Carolina twice.
Yeah.
I'm not as high on New Orleans themselves as I am the fact that they play Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Atlanta 2 times each. I think they win the division.
You think that's 6 wins right there?
Yeah. Or at least 5. All right, so moving on, the Giants, 7.5, and we all took the over. What are we thinking?
I think the Giants this year. I'm believing in Danny Dimes and all the weapons he got in the draft and the addition of Waller. This team could actually be competitive with Dallas this year in their division.
I trust Brian Daboll. That dude is a genius coach, and I think he's going to make the most out of that offensive scheme. I think he's going to exploit Jalen Hyatt the way that we think he should be exploited, and Danny Dimes is going to look like a MVP candidate for 3 weeks before he becomes Danny Dimes again.
He almost did it. He almost looked, you know, like a mirror reflection of Josh Allen's rushing abilities last year, and he may not get as many yards as Josh Allen, but he's going to be probably the second or third. Well, no. Can't say second because Fields, but he's got a chance to be the third or fourth best rushing quarterback this year, probably.
All right, let's move on. We got the Jets. Ryan, you're the only one that took the over of 9.5.
I don't know. I'm just putting faith in Rodgers. I think he's still got, he might have a little bit of pep in his step, and now that he went to a team that actually has some viable passing weapons, he may be able to do something for a year before he retires.
I think they actually got a downgrade at the receiver room. I know he has like chemistry with them, but I think for that scheme setup, I think they actually took a step back. And then we saw last year, like, granted, QB play out of, I mean, we saw Garrett Wilson just tear it up with 1,500 yards, but I think that offense really ran through Breece Hall, even with a powerful defense. And I think Breece is going to take at least 9 weeks to get back to form of how that offense can run through him. And I think that's where we're going to struggle.
Night, baby.
is he a Banaconda, 5th rounder, baby?
I took the under. I think the problems in Green Bay were much more of on Rodgers than people lead to believe, and I think he goes and busts. All right, Philly, 10.5 is the line. We all took the over. They're Philly. Anything else?
They drafted the whole Georgia defense.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool how they did that. I might even want to put money on the Philly line at 10.5 while it's so low.
Yeah, right.
I'm surprised they're not like around KC or Cincinnati.
Yep.
Division still sucks.
We could really talk about the Steelers line at 8.5, but I'm not really that interested. We all took the under.
It only matters because it's the Mike Tomlin 50%. If we believe 50%, then yes. If not, nope.
I have them right there. I have my 8 and 9.
I have them under. San Francisco, we all took the under at 11.5. Interesting.
I think that's a really good Vegas line, and so I have San Francisco at 11 wins this year.
They'll be in the NFC Championship, but they have no quarterback as of right now, right?
They don't have a quarterback.
Kyle Shanahan will make it happen, but it's going to be a struggle. They're going to have this round robin. We're going to pass the ball to three different people every game, or like someone will hand the
wildcat. Just run the wildcat with CMC without a quarterback the whole time.
I think it's my concerns. I share my concerns with both of you guys. They need a quarterback. And while I think they'll finish the season hot, they're going to start slow.
They're going to trade for Matt Stafford. They're going to give up their next year's first. LA is going to take the contract, and they're going to win the Super Bowl.
God, that'd be sick. And Stafford will be hurt, and it'll be like some quarterback you've never heard of will take him to the Super Bowl.
Holy shit, that's Ryan. We're going to see Ryan in the playoffs.
All right, so we're all over on Seattle at 8.5. I don't really have anything to say other than Seattle gets the Rams and the Cardinals twice.
Right.
And that team's pretty decent. As long as Geno doesn't Geno at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Tampa Bay, 6.5. We all took the under. Any thoughts on...
Tampa Bay is my worst ranked team this year. I only have them at 3 wins.
Baker Mayfield is going to see the last days of his playing career, and it's sad. But he's gonna lead this team to 101. I know I said LA is gonna get Caleb, but I think Tampa Bay will have the 101.
Tampa Bay sucks. We all took the under. Tennessee at 7.5. We all took the under.
No fucking way.
I've met 6 and 11. Yeah, well, I think the Derrick Henry of this era of this team is over. Something potentially career ending may happen, and if Derrick Henry goes down, this team's screwed. So
I don't think he's going to have a career-ending injury. I think he's just at the twilight phase of his career. Everyone's like, he could be Frank Gore again. And I don't think that's possible, even though he's a mountain of a man. I think that kind of wear and tear in your body takes a toll on you, especially when you're the only offensive weapon on that offense. We're still Burks believers, but I think that team, like Tony was saying, with Baltimore is held together by rubber bands and paper clips. And instead of seeing it fall apart in week 11, we're going to see it happen in week 4.
Tennessee took a big step back last year, and they didn't do anything that made me think they're taking a step forward this year.
Right.
Not that they were not a terrible team. They were in the contention for the playoffs up until the end of the year, but like in terms of expectation versus reality.
Mike Vrabel is an extremely good coach. That team punches above their weight every season.
Yep.
And they will look decent at times, but yeah.
And then last, the Washington Commanders, we all took the under at 6.5.
Yeah, I have them at 6 wins. It's going to be that crazy thing like last year where they made it in the playoffs with, what, 8 wins? 7 wins or something like that? I have them right at 6. But, you know, they're playing the NFC East. It's going to be tough.
I don't think I can think of a team that anybody cares less about. But yeah. There's just, like, nobody cares about the Commanders. Like, I did acquire Jahan Dotson this year, but...
I love Dotson.
I just think that team is just stuck in purgatory. Even though they have, like, 5 first-round defensive linemen, nobody can stay healthy. They can't figure out how the scheme works. They don't have a quarterback. I mean, Sam Howell's, we haven't seen it, but whatever.
I mean, I like the weapons because they're going to be, at least the wide receivers, because they're going to be playing from behind a lot.
Yeah.
I also really like Brian Robinson because, like you said, they don't really have a quarterback, so they're going to have to run a shitload too.
Return to Gibson. Let's go.
I took the under there. They were one Lamar Jackson trade away from becoming the shit.
Right.
With that, with those weapons and with a defense that, like, if healthy, could be the real deal. It's a cream dream. All right, so
it's the curse of Snyder, man. I know he's gone, but they still got to pay for their sins.
Yep, they'll atone. So that was 82. Do we have any gummy takes of the week? You got any hot fire takes you want to spit out into the universe?
I don't know.
I do have a Whataburger review.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't do that last week. But yeah, man, we had Whataburger when I was in New Mexico. That shit ripped. Sure, it was 2,000 calories, and lady kept being like, you sure you don't want the large? It's the same price as the small. And I was like, it's 10:30. I think me getting the melt with the strawberry shake is sufficient enough and hurting my heart. But yeah, man, it was good. I liked it.
It's a great, I'm fucked up and need to eat fast food. How many? No, it's just two states. All right, so that's good enough. We'll have gummy takes next week. That's as gummy as I want to get. Plus, I'm melting into my chair as we speak. So next week, we'll have 83 Nation, shout out. We'll let you know. We might record on a different day, but we'll see. Thanks for joining us early. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Be well.
Ryan, nice. Be safe.
Enjoy the wilderness. Bear Grylls.
You're our representative for humankind. Go out there and assert your dominance.
Person.